scare anyone. But I'm gonna give it to you straight about Jason. His body was never recovered from the lake after he drowned.
It is 6:49 p.m. and I am drinking my second cup of coffee in the last 45 minutes. So
Same. Will it affect my sleep? No.
Same. It doesn't keep me awake. It just sort of makes me happy. So
will being sick affect my sleep like it has all week? Yes.
I've been lucky as far as like no winter colds, no flu, no anything like that. So
well, you live in an older house. What temperature do you keep your house at?
Well, here's the funny shit, because I keep my house stays at 65.
Oh my God.
But here's the thing. Because my house is 70 years old, if I turn the temperature above 65, it just runs constantly because it won't stay warmer than that.
Oh.
And it's so weird because there will be days when it's like 70 outside and it'll still just be 65 in the house. Like the temperature doesn't fluctuate. So I just have to kind of live with 65 and I wear a lot of hoodies. All right. So. All right. Enough about me. Let's talk about some horror hunks.
Here, let's do the intro. Hold on. Welcome back to Horror Hunks, where we talk the horror movies we love and the hunks we lust. I'm joined with...
me, Chris, again, always.
And I am the rhythmic bouncing of unhindered Christmas yam shoved into a pair of short shorts running away from a killer. Stuart Forrest.
What the fuck was that? You have a whole intro planned. You didn't tell me to plan an intro. Did we do intros?
We did last time too, and I said something. I don't remember what I said.
What did I say? What did I say?
I don't think you did anything. I just like I said it because I'm borrowing it from Katya. Have you watched?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, me and my friend used to send. I'm Katya, and he's Trixie, and so we don't do it anymore because he always forgets. But he would send me a snap every day, and he would be like, "I'm the this and this and that, Trixie Mattel," and then I would send one back that's like, "I'm the this and this and that, Katya," and they were always really, really good, even though I just couldn't think of one off the top of my head. But yeah, I'll have to come up with something for next time because I wasn't even thinking.
I thought of that one literally like right before we started filming because I was exhausted today. I had to go babysit and got home and literally like sat down and like nodded off for 10 minutes. And then I felt my phone vibrate and it was you. And I was just like, crap. I was like, I need to get up and get some coffee.
Yeah, I tried to take a nap earlier today and then Jared called, which like perfectly fine. Love you if you're listening. But so Jared called and I didn't get a nap. And then my sister called and I still didn't get a nap. So I got zero naps today.
See, I'm not a nap person. It's just like going to bed. I have to like wake up and like re-recover from being asleep.
All right. So this episode, we are talking about Friday the 13th Part 2. This is one that Stu has been super excited for. It is a 1981 slasher. It's the second movie in the Friday the 13th franchise, which we'll talk a little bit about because when the original Friday the 13th came out, I don't think they were really planning on doing a sequel or it becoming a franchise. And so this one, they kind of like in a way they had to start over because in the first movie, their antagonist was beheaded and was very much dead. And so they had to kind of start over with this one. I was thinking about it a little bit, and we never once, I don't think we mentioned Jason Voorhees a single time in our Friday the 13th episode, but he's not the killer in that movie. When people think about Friday the 13th, they think about Jason. And so part two is the movie where Jason is actually introduced as a character, as the killer. And I will say, I think I like this one better than part one.
I do too. It's a little bit more fast paced. I even like that Jason is the killer. Like, I had read that the people who are making it, whoever pitched that idea was just like, that doesn't make any sense. Like,
well,
he drowned. Like, that's why his mom was, like, you know, going on her vendetta, is that he drowned. Well, it was way before they've even introduced all the supernatural stuff to it.
Oh, and we will get to that, because even when we think about Jason, we think about, like, the superhuman, busting through doors, ripping mm-hmm. people's faces off, Jason. And he doesn't become that literally until the sixth movie.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite in the franchise and one of my favorite horror movies. So we will talk about it at some point, but we'll have to like get there. But what you were saying about them saying, you know, this is a dumb idea. Betsy Palmer, who played Pamela Voorhees in the first one, she even said like, this is stupid. Yep. Why would you do this? And she barely even came back to do like a cameo in this movie, which was super cool of her to do it even at all. But I'm sure there was a lot of money involved. But yeah, even for your star, for your villain of the first movie to say that your idea is dumb, might have been a little ego blow for me, but it worked out for them.
Yeah. People were craving it. It was like, you know, it's like crack. Like they got a little taste and they wanted more.
And I think even though they weren't expecting it, I would think that that's the goal with any horror movie, right? You want to make a movie that people have so much fun with that they'll basically come back and watch the same movie again over and over again with each sequel. Because this movie is very much, even with some of the kills and some of the characters, is very much just a rehash of the first movie.
I think there's like an identical kill.
But Friday the 13th Part 2 is it actually, even though it only came out 2 years later, it takes place 5 years after the first one, which I thought was an interesting choice. But essentially, it follows a group of camp counselors in training as they they don't go to Camp Crystal Lake. They go across the lake from Camp Crystal Lake to their camp counselor training facility where they're going to be spending part of the summer learning to be camp counselors or getting their professional development or whatever. And then as with any slasher movie, chaos, you know, quickly ensues.
And murder.
Murder. And here's the thing. I'm going to complain about this movie a lot because there were some things that I really just didn't, as far as the characters and some of the story things go, there were some things I really didn't like, but I just really like this movie. It's nothing unexpected, but it's still good. And it's like, they still tried.
I like it. As woefully ill-prepared I am for this. Because I kind of forget the order of the kills, but
Have them in a perfect order because here's the thing. The one thing that I struggle with this movie, and I think a lot of older slashers in general, I struggle with keeping character names straight.
Oh,
I do. When I was taking my notes, I did a pretty good job keeping the men straight. It's the female characters are so interchangeable sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I haven't figured out if it's because for the podcast, I'm focusing on those men, right? I don't know if that's why, or if it's just, they took such little care with these girls.
I would say it's that one because, they were kind of indispensable.
Yeah.
And speaking of our female characters, we had Adrienne King return as Alice for the very beginning shot of the movie. And I guess none of that was scripted. They just told her to do whatever.
Yeah.
And she had no idea what was going on.
She had no idea. She showed up and they had actually filmed the entire movie already. And so her scene, that opening scene, was the last thing shot. And she had no idea that the film had basically wrapped. And they, you know, her situation, I think it's pretty well known at this point that after the first movie, she had a stalker
mm-hmm.
and was kind of uncomfortable with being in the movie. So she asked to just be a small role. And they accommodated that by, I think, wisely just killing her off in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know my movie history well enough, but I think this was probably one of the first times that a returning character comes back for a movie and just immediately gets killed off. And I don't know if you have any insight on that or not, if it's been done before.
I don't, but probably.
I mean, I can't think. It's something that kind of is more common now, right? You have the one that pops into my head is the worst idea ever, but or the worst example ever, but Sarah Michelle Gellar with The Grudge 2, I think they kind of amped up in the trailer that she was going to be in the second movie, but she dies at the very beginning. And that's something that's more common now, but I think in the late 70s, early 80s, I can't think of any other movies off the top of my head where a sequel happened and the main character comes back but just doesn't survive the beginning, the first scene of the movie. But it was almost like, even though she didn't ask to be killed off, it was kind of by her request because she was just so uncomfortable with how things happened after the first movie.
Yeah. I really liked her. Like, I liked her as an actress. So it was good seeing her, and it sucked that she had to die. But they ended up, like, replacing her with, like, an even better, you know, final girl.
Oh, yeah. I love Jenny. I think she's a great final girl. I think it's a little weird. And again, these movies, because there weren't a lot of formulaic slashers before these, they didn't really have like a playbook to go by. But she's honestly not in the movie that much.
She's not in the movie that much, but also one of the only characters who's given like a really subtle backstory that's going to come into play.
Here's the thing. That is the one thing I hate about this movie.
Really?
There are two characters who have any kind of personality slash backstory at all, and it's Jenny and Mark.
Yeah.
And other than that, they are just...
We will get to Mark.
We will get to Mark. I know you're excited.
We will get to Mark.
Here's the thing, though. All of the information we're going to talk about him aside, I wanted him to survive this movie. Jenny, if it had been Jenny and Mark instead of Jenny and Paul at the end, I would have been so happy. Because anybody besides those two characters, they are just like cookie cutter paper doll cutouts of humans.
Yes.
Jeff kind of has a little bit of a personality. Since we're talking about it, let's go through our hunks. I wrote down that we have Jeff, who is kind of the Kevin Bacon stand-in for this movie. Very much a similar character, very much a similar look. Shaggy hair, tank top kind of guy. I think he's supposed to be kind of a bad boy.
I don't know. He's wearing a Newsies cap. Well, he's driving that huge truck, but he's also wearing a Newsies cap, which kind of, you know.
Yeah.
He loses bad boy points.
Maybe he thinks he's a bad boy, but maybe. He's the closest thing we really get in this movie. We have Ted, who
is just not another replacement for the one guy in the first one.
Yeah, and I can't find my notes for the first Friday the 13th. I can't remember his name, but he is basically essentially a slightly more ripped version of the comic relief character from the first movie.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised that he had a six pack, but other than that, he's just very, you know, the goofy fun guy, the comic relief. You know he's not going to make it through the movie. We had Scott, who's a total creep. But other than that, he has no character traits other than being kind of an attractive creep. Mark, I don't really know how would you describe Mark?
Mark, how would I describe Mark? That 6'2", 170 pound slab of all American beef.
Hold on. Wait a minute. I meant as a person.
I'm sorry. I just didn't see him as a person. He's very sweet, and I think they played into him being in a wheelchair as him being very humble. I don't know, because he's not, you know, he's the least showiest of the bunch. He's the more genuine of all the guys.
Yeah, I wrote down very charming and not like what you would expect in a movie like this.
Yes.
He is humble, he's charming, he's kind, he's sweet, he's attractive. He has zero negative character traits. And typically, someone in a movie like this who, you know, again, we don't know he's not going to survive, but like most of the people don't. You would think there'd be something about him, like Scott, who's just a total creep. There's nothing bad about Mark, and that's why I think I root for him, even though he's not in the movie a ton. I root for him because he's just like a good person.
And, well, I so like the actor is not wheelchair bound, but they decided to make his character wheelchair bound, and I couldn't really find any information why. They just like pushed for it. So I wonder if, you know, being that it was the day, they were like, hey, if we make him a cripple, like that'll be his downfall.
I wonder if it's a nod to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It could be. And him being in a wheelchair just made me want him to survive even more.
Yeah, and it's tough because there's a lot, like, being in a wheelchair is not a character trait. It doesn't define who you are as a person in any way. So I think that's maybe a little misguided on the writer slash director's part. But I think it does give him more depth because we get backstory as to why he's in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm going to keep going back to Scott because I just really hated that character. I didn't know his name until his death scene. Yeah. So... Mark is great. We love Mark. This is going to become a Mark Stan podcast. And we will talk more about him as an actual human person and not just a character, because Stu, you have like some information about him that I didn't know.
I did a deep dive on him.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that probably more when we talk about his death scene. And then our last hunk is Paul. Paul is cute. He's blonde, but he's a cardboard cutout. He's again not a character.
He's pretty. He's nice to look at.
He's there. And here's the thing. He is so one-dimensional that we don't even know for sure if he survives the movie. So we don't get that confirmation. I don't know if you've seen part 3, but Friday the 13th part 2, 3 and 4 all take place over the course of the same weekend. And in part 3, they lead us to believe that Paul survives part 2 because there's that whole sequence at the end where he's alive. But then Jason crashes through the window. And so it's kind of left ambiguous whether that was a dream sequence or not. But then in part 3, I guess something happens when the news lists the body count from the previous movie that leads people to think that he actually may have survived the movie, but we never see or hear from him again, which is all for the best, to be honest. What I really came to notice with this movie specifically is that even though it doesn't really objectify the male characters as much as the first one, most of these characters are only there to be looked at or to be killed. There's just nothing about most of them that would makes them interesting in the slightest, which I hate because I enjoy the movie. If it was a good fun movie with more interesting characters, it might be like in one of my top horror movies. We just don't get any interesting character development other than Mark and Jenny.
If they would have cut out Scott, I would have been fine with it.
And I agree with that. Scott is maybe in the movie 5 minutes total. Because I even wrote down, before he even dies, I wrote down preppy in a polo. And then I said, not seen too often. And then, like, the next scene, he's there, but he dies. He totally could have been cut from the movie. He's basically just another dead body for the kill count, you know?
Yeah.
And I sound like I'm saying really terrible things about this movie. It's really just how they treated some of the characters as characters that I don't like. On a positive note, though, I will say that I think this movie is very clever. It's a little self-aware, I guess. There's like some interesting cuts, camera cuts, where the dog finds Jason in the woods. And then the next cut is of hot dogs on a grill.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was really funny. But then there's another one where Terry, or, you know, female victim number one, because a lot of the female like characters are interchangeable in this movie. She is like screaming in the woods and it cuts to somebody playing the guitar really loud. And I liked that a lot too. But let's talk a little bit about these hunks and their deaths. The first to go is Scott, thankfully. I think we may get the order of this wrong, but with the deaths, because I didn't write it down this time, but I think Scott is the first hunk to get killed.
The first hunk. I think our first death of the movie, other than Alice, is the crazy guy.
Crazy Ralph.
Crazy Ralph. I think, our first official on-camp death.
I think it's an unnecessary kill, though.
I do, too.
He's the one who knows something's up at Camp Crystal Lake, right? And so he's the prophet of doom. He's warning people not to go there. It's almost kind of like the movie breaking its own rule to kill him off.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't, he's the one who obeys the movie rules, but he does sneak onto the camp and gets choked, I think.
Garroted.
What does that mean?
Like with a wire, like a wire garrote.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I know Jason comes from behind a tree and wraps something around his neck, and there's blood, but he, like, chokes. He's garroted.
I'm probably just making up a word.
It might be real.
I'm pretty sure the word is garrote, but I don't think garroted is a real word.
I'm going to look it up right now.
That's a stewism. It is garroted. That's a real word.
Okay, you were faster than me.
Goodness, I'm good.
Look at you knowing words.
Right?
But here's the thing. Scott's character... this is where I get the girls mixed up a little bit. He follows Terry, who is kind of... I mean, her first scene in the movie is a close-up of her butt. So she's kind of that sex appeal, I guess, of the movie. I'm trying to say it in a way that doesn't sound bad on her part. She didn't do anything wrong. It's the way they portray her. But so she goes skinny dipping by herself, which, like, horror movie 101, do not do that. But and Scott follows her and steals her clothes
and hides so that out she has in the trees.
Yeah, steals her clothes so that she has to come out of the water naked and then hides in the trees to watch her. And then I forget exactly how it plays out, but they are making their way back through the woods, and he gets caught in, like, a rope trap that suspends him upside down, which he says that it was, like, something that Paul had put out. I am going to assume that that was a mistake and it was actually Jason who put it there. Because the early movies, the part two, part three, part four, Jason, he's not a zombie. He's just a guy. And I think he's a little more like survivalist. And I think that he would have put out a trap to either catch teenagers or catch food or whatever.
Well, he's also been living in the woods in his shack for 5 years.
Yeah. So obviously he's going to have, you know, the run of the woods, right? But Scott gets strung up in this trap and is upside down. Terry goes back to the cabin to get a knife to cut him down. But before she gets back, Jason comes out and stabs him, right?
Yeah.
The upside down thing was cool. Getting caught in, like, a rope trap was kind of a cool idea. But honestly, for that character, I was like, drop a house on him. I don't care. Like, just get him off the screen.
And he was, thank God.
Yeah, and I wrote down for him, just as my last note, got sliced, no actual personality. So, the camp creep is gone. Next in line after Scott is Mark. I think it's Mark.
Is it Mark? Oh, that's right.
Because it's kind of a weird thing. You know what? Let's say it's Jeff, because it plays out weird. Marks is in between two other people that feels really weird. And we'll talk more about Mark anyway. So even if Mark is second, we're going to pretend he's not. Jeff and Sandra are killed at the exact same time. No, it's a complete copy of part one where Jeff and Sandra sneak into a cabin to have some sex.
That's right. And they're the ones that have the exact same death as the first. And he gets
pretty much the exact same death. And this is another thing I like about the movie is there was a point where somebody leans a spear against a wall at the very beginning of the movie.
Ted.
Yeah, Ted leans his spear against the wall because he had this whole joke where it was kind of racially insensitive, like the first movie, but he jumps out and he's in a loincloth and he has a spear. But he leans the spear against the wall, and then later in the movie, Jason picks up that spear when he comes in the house. And he goes upstairs. Jeff and Sandra have just finished making love. And what I think is really funny, not funny necessarily, but for a movie like this, Jeff is just like cuddling on top of her to his heart's content. Like, he is just cuddling his little heart out. And I think that's funny, one, because he is kind of like the bad boy character. He's got, you know, this whole little cuddle thing going on with his girlfriend, which, to be honest, I love them in this movie. I think they're a cool little couple that just runs around together all the time. But Jason comes in, Sandra sees him, but not in time, and he impales both of them with the spear all the way through them, all the way through the bed and into the floor.
And the special effects on that, they used, like, their heads were there and they used a fake body.
Yeah, I could see that. It's also not a very, I don't think any of the kills in this movie are actually very graphic.
No, because they did get the whoever MPAA or whatever after the first one came out, like, really, like, clamored down hard on, like, how much gore could be in it.
I know they did the same thing. Part 7, when we ever get to that one, like, it, they mutilated that movie and cut out all of the gore, which I don't watch a horror movie for the gore, but it is fun to have, like if Scott's death had been the goriest thing I'd ever seen in my life, I would have loved it because he deserved it.
I watch horror movies for the gore. I mean, isn't that the point? That's like the money shot of a horror movie.
I get that. I don't want to be the guy that's like, ooh, I love this movie because it's so gory and gross. I can enjoy a movie that's not gory. I just think that for certain characters, like, the gore is fine. I liked Jeff. Again, he didn't have a ton of personality, but I think I liked him. He was
wasn't fun. Insufferable, so.
Yeah, he wasn't insufferable. He wasn't awful. He was just, like, a fun, cool guy. But, you know, getting speared through the back while you're cuddling your girlfriend is also, like, kind of a cool death, so.
I mean, it's kind of romantic.
It wasn't as good. It wasn't as good as the Kevin Bacon kill from part one.
No, that was probably the goriest death in the whole movie and kind of, like, prolonged.
Yeah, because it's just, like, pushing through.
Yeah.
This one, it's just very much, like, almost implied even that this it shows the... It shows the spear hit the floor,
mm-hmm.
and there's, like, blood running off of it, but it doesn't show, like, them getting stabbed. So,
no.
Very tame for today's standards. It was probably very shocking in 1981, to be honest, but still a cool death, just a little tamed down. Up next, we have Mark. Talk to us a little bit about Mark. You seem to know lot about this guy. You've told me about this guy, but I don't know a lot of information. And I looked him up, and he really wasn't in a lot of acting roles before or after this.
A lot of on-screen acting roles. So, yeah, because, I mean, he's, like, handsome as hell. If anyone listening has not seen it, I mean, his wardrobe for the entire movie is literally, like, him wearing...
He's in the little jersey.
He's in the little, like, football jersey the entire time, and he is just, you know... Lean, dark hair, all-American, good-looking guy. And I Google him, which just makes it even more interesting that the actor,
his
Tom
name
McBride,
was Tom McBride, yep.
Was, I don't think he's gay or was gay. I don't think he was out at the time because he was still pretty young. And that seems to be, you know, a trend with young actors that are not out.
Well, and it was 1981, I mean.
And it was 1981.
Yeah.
But I guess he was out to most of the cast because his on-screen love interest in it. What's her name?
She was... Let me look. I think Vicky.
Vicky.
Yep.
That actress had been hitting on him, like, the entire time and, like, you know, really, like, was feeling it. She was feeling it the way that I'm feeling him. And then he was just like took her aside and was like, hey, I'm gay. And, like, my boyfriend, like, hangs around the set. And so she was a little, I saw an interview where she was just like, oh, completely heartbroken. She was like, damn it. Like, this guy. And of course he's gay.
Well, because if he's anything like his character, he's just charming as hell.
And from what I've read, like, he actually was, like, a super, like, the Tom was a really sweet guy. Like, anytime I find anyone who posts things about him that, like, knew him in New York and L.A., they have nothing but, like, good things to say, that he was a genuinely sweet person. And he did a lot of onstage work and not, like, a ton of film and TV.
He was on Broadway.
He was on Broadway. Yeah. And he was in this, which we got to capture his, you know, horror hunkness forever. But he sadly passed away in...
It was 95, I think.
95. Mm-hmm. From complications from AIDS.
Yeah, and just less than like 2 weeks away from his 43rd birthday. So, like, super, I mean... It's always unfortunate when somebody's life is cut short, but then the fact that his was cut short because of complications from AIDS just kind of makes it more tragic. And also, like, he was, I mean, who knows where he would have been today, because he was an actor, stage and film. He was a model. I did see that he was cast as, this is the IMDb's words, not mine, but a Marlboro hunk for... Yeah. Billboards. Yeah. So he is an actual hunk, not just in the sense of what we're talking about in this movie. He was cast as a hunk, which seems like a super cool, super kind, sweet guy. And I will just be honest, nothing to do with the fact that he's a gay actor, nothing to do with the fact that he's the most attractive man in this movie. He is, like, genuinely, Mark is my favorite character in this movie, for even as little as he's in it. Because he also gets the most backstory. He tells Vicky when they're flirting, which, by the way, for him to be a gay man, they had great chemistry in the movie.
I mean, he's a gay man, so of course.
Well, true. But he tells her that he was in a motorcycle accident, and that's why he's in a wheelchair. And it's kind of a cute scene, but she's like, is it permanent? And he said, well, the doctors think it is, but I don't. And then she's like, well, did just your legs not work, or do other things not work? Like, she's really, really coming on to him. And the character is maybe a little taken aback by it, because, you know, he's in a wheelchair. He probably doesn't get hit on by girls a lot. And then they make the pact, or the decision, to go find a cabin to have sex in. But they never get there because poor Mark thinks he hears Vicky outside, and so he goes out onto the front porch. And then in what is honestly maybe one of the more tense scenes of the movie, the way the camera work is done is they're zooming in on his back, making us think that, like, somebody's maybe creeping up on him, and it happens for a very long time. And so they're like slowly zooming in on his back, and then all of a sudden this machete, which I'll say something about that in a second, but this machete comes out of nowhere and just slams into his face, and he lets out a little yelp, and his chair rolls backwards and down a really long flight of stairs,
and it just keeps rolling backwards.
It just keeps going and going until it actually kind of freeze frames on it a little bit. But the thing I wanted to point out is, so even though Jason kills a lot of different ways in these movies, he's known as, like, his weapon is known as the machete. And Mark is the first character to ever be killed by Jason's machete.
That's true. And it would go on to be his main weapon forever.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, not counting that, like, Alice beheads Mrs. Voorhees in the first one with a machete, which I'm going to assume it might be the same machete, because the whole idea is that Jason's kind of, like, taking out revenge on his mom dying. But yeah, I think it was kind of cool. I don't necessarily equate Jason with a machete, because he does kill in so many different ways. But if you're thinking, okay, Michael Myers uses a butcher knife, Freddy has, you know, razor fingers, if you ask about Jason Voorhees, people are probably going to say a machete.
And that's Mark what was I the first. Think of.
Yep, Mark was the first.
Mark was the first.
Poor guy, though. Pour one out for Mark, because, again, in a franchise as big as Friday the 13th, there are a lot of really iconic kills, and I think he's probably top five.
Yeah.
Just because, like, the wheelchair aspect, the unsuspecting getting the machete in the face and then rolling down the stairs. The whole thing is very unexpected. And,
and another point on the actor, Tom McBride, I don't know if you have seen that. I haven't watched it yet. But there's actually a documentary about his life that came out after he died called, Life and Death on the A-List.
I did see that that existed. I've never seen it, though. Have you?
I have not. It's still on my, like, need-to-watch list.
I feel like it's maybe something that would be streaming somewhere or just be, like, free on YouTube. But definitely would be interested in watching it. I just lost my train of thought.
Mark will do that. He is just a slab of all-American beef.
He is. Now,
I don't know how the actor would feel about it, but I hope that years later, when he's still being talked about, that would be heartwarming.
No, yeah, absolutely. Now
he's still being objectified years later.
Did you tell me, did he do porn?
No, he, like, did some, like, I guess some boudoir photography, like, okay, in his modeling days.
For some reason, I thought you had said he had done, like, full-on
photography. He was fully naked. I mean, he's naked in his documentary.
You sent me the photo, his modeling photos. I've seen a few of those that you sent, but which, like, definitely worth a Google search, but
and not safe for work Google search.
Yeah, definitely go incognito. But yeah, again, great character, great guy, great actor. Unfortunate, untimely death. Mm-hmm. And I think he's actually, I think when I was looking it up, I think he was the first Friday the 13th main cast member, because Crazy Ralph died in real life before him. But I think he was the first, like, main cast member of all of the movies to pass away. So, mm-hmm. Unfortunate. And he is of the hunks. He's the only other one who dies. Ted survives the movie. The goofy, funny guy goes to the bar and never comes back, which is a weird choice that we never see him again. But he does.
Yeah.
Survive. I always wonder if maybe they were trying to, because, again, 1981, they didn't know really that Jason was going to be the killer of this movie, right? So we know now because it's horror movie lore. But I'm wondering if maybe they were trying to set Ted up as the killer, or, like, make people think he was the killer.
Yeah.
Because we just don't see him. It doesn't work if that's what they were trying, because I kind of forgot about him. But I also went into this having seen it 5 times and knowing who the killer is. So I don't know what I thought the first time I watched it. And then Paul, cardboard cutout Paul, maybe survives the movie. He comes back to the camp with Jenny and they start finding all of the bodies. They know something's wrong, obviously, because all of their employees are dead. The scene that I really like, though, and we're kind of shifting away from the hunks a little bit because it's a Jenny scene, but she's in one of the cabins and the lights are out and she just starts saying, Paul, somebody's in here. Paul, somebody's in here with us. Mm-hmm. Paul, somebody's in here. And then, like, Jason is in the room with them. And it's just, like, very startling that he just kind of jumps out of nowhere. But for her to be sitting there saying, like, he's here, he's here, he's here, and it still be a scary moment, I really like that. There's all kinds of struggle. They do the final girl circuit where they run around and they find all the dead bodies. And they end up in Jason's shack where Terry's body is in the shack.
Mm-hmm.
Alice's body is in the shack. Because earlier in the movie, they had just said that Alice had disappeared 5 years earlier. But her body, her rotting corpse, is in the shack. And Mrs. Voorhees's severed head is on an altar in the shack. Mm-hmm. Honestly, though, really cool decision, because, again, Jason is, at this point in the series, Jason is just a, air quotes, regular guy. He's not supernatural, but he's collecting these bodies. He has his mom's mummified head on an altar with candles around it. This guy's
with her sweater.
With her sweater laid out in front of it. This guy's Looney Tunes, right? Like, even without the supernatural parts, this guy is terrifying. It plays out a little convoluted, but because Jenny is a child psychology major in college, she decides to put on Mrs. Voorhees' sweater and pretend to be her to, like, trick Jason into thinking that she's alive. Silly idea. I get it. Doesn't really work out for her either, though, because he kind of snaps out of it and gets some stabs in on her and Paul. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they – I think they machete him in the arm or the neck. It's another one of those really annoying slow motion sequences like with the first movie. Slow motion to the point where you're kind of looking at your watch like, how long is it going to take for her to swing this machete? And then, you know, Jason is, as far as we know at this point, dealt with. And we can assume that Paul survives, but Jenny definitely survives. And there's a whole, like, kind of maybe dream sequence where she and Paul go back to the cabin. They find that Muffins the dog is still alive, which is why I think it's a dream, because Muffins was shown chopped to pieces at one point. And then Jason bursts through without his burlap sack on his head, bursts through the window and grabs Jenny. And then it cuts to her on a gurney being loaded into an ambulance. And she's saying, like, where's Paul? What happened? And that's the end of the movie. So kind of a little rushed description there. But I think overall, other than the fact that it gets a little convoluted with what's a dream and what's not at the end, you know, I think it wraps up well, and it kind of leaves us with that idea of like, well, maybe there'll be another one. And there, mm-hmm. you know, there was 9 or 10 other ones, so they kept making them.
And this was, because you mentioned the burlap sack, which I forgot to mention, is what he's wearing on his head. He's wearing a burlap sack instead of his traditional hockey mask.
Yeah, he gets the hockey mask in part three. But what I think is really interesting is, now, I haven't seen the original. I've only seen the remake, and I love it. But his outfit is pretty much an exact replica of the killer from the town that dreaded sundown.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's cool that they kind of paid homage to that. And not only that, but the costume director said it just makes sense that he would be wearing a burlap sack because he's been living in the woods for so long. And, like, what else is he going to have on his head? So I like, it makes sense, but it's also pays tribute to another, like, classic slasher movie that I like.
Very true.
I was going to text you about this and I didn't. I went through and I gave the hunks ratings out of 10. If you want to, like, kind of put together like a mental list while I go through mine, I'll just go from like lowest to highest. So I gave Scott, Creepy Scott, a 2 out of 10. He's pretty, but he's so much of a creep that he should be like a negative 10 out of 10.
Okay. He, at like passing glance, is pretty, but there's a point, there's like one point where he comes out, he like shoots that one girl in the butt with like a rock, or throws mm-hmm. a rock at her butt, and just like yeah. steps out of the woods and looks so creepy. I'm giving him a 1 out of 10.
Just okay. So 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10. Stu, this is weird. Normally your standards are lower than mine, but that's fine. My next lowest was Paul. And I gave him a 4 out of 10. I think I had it at 6, and then I made it 5, and then I made it 4 as the movie went along, because he just is so damn boring that I couldn't raise it above a 4. He's cute. He's got the blonde hair. His roots are showing, but whatever. 4 out of 10 on Paul. That's really all I had to say about that.
Well, let's see. I'm going to give him a 6 out of 10 because okay. he's cardboard, but he's also nice to look at cardboard. And he kind of, like, physically embodies very much what I think of when I think summer, like, summer slasher. Like, he's got the look.
He does have the look. I might end up cutting this out, but I was just about to say he's cardboard, but you can still fuck cardboard.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, you're not wrong.
My next lowest, I don't know how you're going to feel about this one. My next highest, I guess, was Ted. Ted got a 6 out of 10 only because, one, he's like the goofball, but he's not as annoying as the guy from part one.
Mm-hmm.
And two, when he comes out shirtless, I just was not expecting like big biceps and abs on him. So he got extra points for the muscle tone. So 6 out of 10 on Ted, even though like I'm not going to walk up to him at a bar, he's still got that like goofy hotness to him.
I'd agree with that. I'd give him a 6 out of 10 too.
Okay, good. I thought you were going to say like 2 and I was going to feel really bad about giving him a 6.
There's like one point where he puts the mask on the spear and like does that like sticks out his tongue. It's very showy for no one else to be around, and I always think that's weird when they include that in movies, because it's obviously for the audience and not for anyone else.
And that's so. Why he gets a 6 for me. He is a confident nerd. We're gonna, okay. When we do part 3 eventually, there's a character who's the nerdy character, and he is the most obnoxiously unconfident person I've ever seen in a movie, and I can't stand him. But Ted is a nerd, but he's like very confident in it, and I like that.
I'd agree with that.
Next on the list is Jeff. I thought Jeff was going to be my number one, because I really like a guy who, when you look at him at first glance, you're like, is he kind of ugly? But I ended up giving Jeff a 7. And I think it's something – he might have gotten a little bit higher, but he's very much like the knockoff Kevin Bacon of this movie.
Yeah.
So he's cute. He does, I think, show probably like the most skin of any of the guys in this movie, because he's running around in the cutoff shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So he is very cute. There's something about his face at times where I'm kind of just like, wait, are you not attractive? Maybe you are, maybe you're not. So like a solid 7, maybe 7.5, but I didn't do any 0.5s.
Which, that aspect of it is, and he, like, I thought of him a lot, Lip from Shameless.
That, and see, Lip was my favorite from Shameless, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Very much makes sense. He looks like a Muppet, but he's a hot Muppet, so. and then number one, you guessed it, Mark. Need we say more? But I gave him a 9 out of 10, just because like nobody's perfect. 9 out of 10 for Mark. And we've already gushed over him so much that you know why. But man, love that character. Love that character. Love that actor.
I'm giving him 10 out of 10.
I knew you were going to give him a 10 out of 10. Is there
10 out of 10 would rate again.
Yeah, there's no reason to even argue over who the best hunk of the movie is. It's Mark, hands down. We love him. And that's all there is to say about it.
He's our horror hunk that we lost.
He's our horror hunk. He's going to be hard to top in future episodes because, hard to top, but he's going to be hard to top in future episodes because there can be these attractive characters, but he just has the personality. And you know how I am about a good personality. So
I'm giving him 10 out of 10. One, he's super hunky.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the few developed characters in the movie. And then. But the actor, I'm also giving him that because he was, he's a gay actor, which at the time, they were there, but they weren't out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was and I couldn't even imagine being in the limelight in the early 80s, not completely out. Like he'd have to be scared, it had to be scary. Especially, and it sounds like he was kind of like confident in himself because he did tell his co-star like, hey, I'm a gay man and I have a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, he could have been fired, at the time. So I'm glad that it went well. And I, am happy he's in this movie. But yeah, definitely strenuous for sure.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Horror Hunks. Your hosts were Stu Forrest and me, Chris Waltz. Join us again in 2 weeks when we discuss the hunks of 1997's I Know What You Did Last Summer. Horror Hunks is a Dead Oaks production with music produced by Ben Bryles. Find us on Twitter @HorrorHunks, and until next time, stay horny, don't die.